Hey y'all, my name is Griffin. This is my lovely wife, Cammy. We've been married for 13 years, and we have three kids. I think we have a picture of them. Sully is 10, and Rosie is 8, and Jolene is 5. It sadly wasn't that long ago that the two of us were pretty much ready to split this family up and call it quits, and so we'd love to tell you a little bit about what God has done for us since then.
I was born and raised in a small town in northern Oklahoma with a pretty typical childhood and a really loving family. We went to church on Sundays, but that really didn't affect Monday through Saturday. I knew a lot about Jesus and was around church quite a bit, but I didn't have a personal relationship with him that had any effect on the way I was living or the choices I was making. So once I started high school, I began pursuing what I thought would make me happy. I was partying, drinking, and desperately seeking out my worth and value in the approval of men. I was so hungry for that approval that it started to play out in really unhealthy ways in my life. At the age of 15, began years of sexual harassment by my boss at the time, who was also a really close family friend of ours. And then at 16, one night at a party, I was sexually assaulted by a boy that I thought really liked me. He ended up spinning the story to look like I was just another one of his conquests, and the derogatory and degrading things that were said about me caused some of my deepest hurt and pain. I never told anyone the truth of what actually happened that night, and therefore lived with an incredible amount of guilt and shame for decades after that. But that assault was a turning point for me, where I decided I would never let another man have control over me like that again. So I convinced myself that I could handle relationships on my terms, go after whoever I wanted, cut the feelings out, and always be in control. But deep down, I was wounded and was still seeking my worth and value and the approval of any man who would look my way. I continued this destructive pattern throughout college, thinking that surely the next guy would finally be the one to make me happy. But all I was doing was just heaping on the shame, hurt, and pain. At 22, my destructiveness culminated in me having an affair with a married man. There really was no limit to what I would do to seek out that approval. So after college, I got a job offer in Dallas, and moving away from my current state of affairs seemed really appealing. So in 2005, I moved to Dallas, and a friend invited me to this church that she found called Watermark. It was here that I truly heard and understood the gospel for the first time, that I needed a savior, I didn't have to clean up in order for him to love me, and that he died so I could have life. This love, acceptance, and approval is what I had always been searching for. So I jumped in at Watermark, began attending church, Bible study, and serving with a young adults ministry called The Porch, which is where I met Griffin.
All right, so I grew up in Miami, but my family moved to Dallas right as I started high school. My parents are followers of Christ and just celebrated 43 years of marriage. So as a child, I was taught about God and what Jesus had done for me on the cross. We attended church every weekend. We spent a lot of time during the week at church or with friends from church. At one point, we lived across the street from church. So God was a big theme in my childhood life. As I got older, I was involved in my church's youth group. I went on mission trips and did lots of other churchy things. But God had no real relevance to me personally. I strived to be good and try and act the right way because I was saved and I didn't want to displease God or displease my parents, but I didn't really know God at all. I didn't read my Bible or spend any time in prayer. I was mostly focused on others perceiving me as a decent person. It was a lot of work that ultimately left me feeling isolated and shameful for how bad I felt like I really was. I functioned this way for most of my life going forward. I was always looking for a way to belong, some way to be validated by the people around me. In high school, that meant going to youth group and doing all the church activities and then hiding all the inappropriate relationships I was having with girls. In college, it was no longer fashionable to be perceived as a good Christian, so I followed my folly and did whatever felt right. This was the beginning of a disastrous on-again, off-again relationship with alcohol and drugs. I moved from girlfriend to girlfriend, always desperate for somebody to validate me. I flunked out of college after my first year and moved back home to Dallas. I knew I needed to make some changes in my life, and I still believed in God, so I began to attending church again. I decided to try the Porch here at Watermark, and that's where I met Cammy in 2006.
So Griff and I were married 11 months later in March of 2007. And the first years of our marriage were characterized by either high highs or very low lows. We were complete opposites. I worked a 9-to-5. Griffin was home all day and worked as a guitar player in the evenings. I came from a family that never communicated or said sorry, and Griffin came from a family of over-communicators where sharing feelings was very normal. I'm very neat, scheduled, and organized, while Griffin is very relaxed and easygoing. So there were lots of feelings of incompatibility between us from the beginning, which, of course, we handled very differently. I tended to withdraw and focus on a plan or action items to make things better, while Griffin was passively hopeful that things would just eventually get better. At this point, we were completely ignorant of the fact that we had expectations of one another coming into marriage. We always looked at the other's behavior as the source of the problem, rarely considered that maybe all the junk we've already mentioned had something to do with why we each struggled within our marriage. Then, 1.5 years into marriage, my dad passed away from a 5-year battle with cancer. Even though we knew there was no beating the type of cancer that he had, I was devastated at the reality of being left to live in a world that didn't include my dad. I saw the toll that it took on my mom, and as a form of self-protection, began to put up walls with Griffin, because if I did never let him get too close, then I thought it wouldn't hurt as bad if something ever happened to him. But in the midst of working through my grief several months after my dad's death, we became pregnant with our first child.
So when Cammie and I met, I was back on the straight and narrow, but I still had no real relationship with God. I didn't spend any time with him or read much of his word. Instead, I was still trying to validate my insecurities, doing all the right things. So I played in the band here at the porch, and I joined a community group, things like that. My identity was focused around being perceived as a great musician and having a good woman in my life. I was a glutton for approval. I was obsessed with how I dressed and other ridiculous things like my hair being perfect. And obviously, God in his kindness saw fit to remove that particular idol from me. I was easily hurt or angered when anyone did anything that made me feel like I wasn't smart enough, good enough, cool enough. I carried all that baggage into marriage. I perceived Cammie's self-protection as rejection all the time, and this led to a cycle of consistent conflict between us. When I felt rejected, I would lash out in anger. Proverbs 29:11 says, "A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control." This caused Cammie to pull away more, which only fed my frustrations and feelings of disapproval. Years of operating in this unhealthy way led to lots of fighting and never resolving conflict, until eventually we were just two people living in the same house, raising kids together, and we would go weeks without speaking to one another. We found ourselves further apart than we really ever thought was possible.
And so because of all the hurts and wounds from my past, I never wanted to feel weak, vulnerable, out of control, or wrong. I wasn't allowing the Lord or anybody else to speak into those hurts because I kept them hidden. I didn't look to him to heal those wounds, so not surprisingly, they never got better. So my marriage that played out in never being able to admit mistakes or seek forgiveness, being emotionally unavailable and always keeping Griffin at arm's length. I tried to control Griffin, what he did, the choices he made, and I just generally disconnected from the relationship because it was too risky to be fully known. I was solely focused on Griffin and looking to him to change to make the marriage better. I can't tell you how many times I thought if he would just and fill in the blank, then things would get better. But Matthew 7:3-5 says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." That plank in Griffin's eye was the only thing I could see, and I was pretty sure I didn't even have a speck in my own eye. My struggles were less obvious on the outside, so it was really easy to point the finger at him and to tell myself that he was the only one who had any real problems.
Yeah, so on my end, I was certain that the state of our relationship was mostly Cammie's fault as well. I was completely unwilling to consider how obsessed I was with Cammie's approval of me as a man. I was desperate for her to validate me, and I blamed her for almost everything that was wrong between us. I rarely felt accepted by her, and so I exasperated her by trying to force a closer relationship. I crushed her under the weight of my neediness. I wasn't loving and serving her unconditionally. I was just trying to get her to open up so that my needs in the relationship could be met. eventually, I quit trying to work at things at all, and I just tried to deal with the fact that this wasn't going to be what I had hoped it would be. I returned to my old friends, drugs, and alcohol. Alcohol made it feel like I could get through the day a little bit easier. It helped me ignore the pain I was in and the rejection I was feeling from Cammie. I wanted to be loved, respected, and valued, and I didn't know how to get it, and so I drank in increasing amounts over the next number of years. I was completely blind to the truth that I already had all the love and acceptance I could ever need in the person of Christ. Ephesians 2:4-5 says, "But God, who is rich in mercy, because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. It's by grace you've been saved." I had known about Jesus for a long time, but I didn't understand how much God loved me or that he was the answer to the ache in my soul. So I hid my sin from everyone. No one knew that I had become completely dependent upon drugs and alcohol just to physically get through the day. I was a slave to the thing that once made the days move a little bit easier. The substances I were hooked on no longer numbed the pain like they used to. So I drank and used drugs just to feel relatively normal. At the height of my addiction, I began to get closer to a female coworker. Our friendship grew and eventually became a full-fledged affair. It's the worst decision I've ever made. It's something that I didn't think I was capable of, even at my lowest. I know now that the affair was just another place that I was looking for significance and validation. When it ended, I was a complete disaster because all my coping mechanisms couldn't satisfy me and they left me worse off than when I started. One night, I came home very drunk and Cammie confronted me about it. I had tried several times to get sober on my own without telling anybody about it and I failed every time, so I thought, why not roll the dice and just tell her the truth and see how this goes? I told her about my drinking. So I began Regen, which is Watermark's recovery ministry. And for a while, things got better. I confessed my affair, and Cammie and I began to rebuild. But like any other sin struggle, when we try to manage it in our own strength, it just doesn't go well. In John 15:5, Jesus says, "I am the vine, and you are the branches. If you remain in me, and I in you, you will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing." So in a few short months, I was back to lying, hiding, and drinking daily. There simply isn't enough time to describe the rest of that year. But 1 year after Cammie confronted me that night, I checked into an inpatient rehab center. I cannot say enough about how important our community group and our families were during this time. The guys in my community group pursued me when I literally tried to run a couple of times. And our parents, along with many other friends, supported Cammie and the kids emotionally and financially while I was in treatment.
So during that crazy year, in between when I confronted him and him going to rehab, we actually came to reengage. I wanted Griffin to come so he could get fixed, but it turns out they don't offer that service here. But Griffin confessed the affair during week two of our group, but he was still hiding big parts of the story, like continuing to drink and using drugs. We tried to reconcile after the affair confession, but because I was afraid of the hurt and worthlessness that the affair made me feel, I never really processed it, and so I just continued in my pattern of shutting off my feelings and pushing things down. We did have some surface-level reconciliation that we tried to convince ourselves was the real deal, but it was short-lived, and before long, we were back to being roommates and back to only focusing on the other's problems. During this time, I learned about the continued drinking and was devastated all over again. When I found evidence of drug abuse in our home, I called our reengage leaders and Griff's parents to come over and help me walk through asking him to leave our home. That started a week of a downward spiral for Griff that ended in him checking into an inpatient rehab facility. The last night of reengage is a celebration night, which I didn't go to because I was home alone with our three kids while Griff was in rehab. I felt like I had nothing to celebrate. This is what my best efforts at self-protection and controlling Griff and my marriage had gotten me. My efforts at trying to keep it all together came crumbling down around me. I was alone, sad, feeling unlovable, and was sure that my marriage was over.
After I got out of rehab, Cammie and I were separated for 6 months, and I moved into a sober living home with five other addicts. We were living separately, but our community was pushing us to pursue reconciliation, so we met with them regularly. When God sobered me up, my relationship with him began to change. For the first time in my life, I quit trying to manage all of my issues, and I just surrendered to God. I trusted that he could do for me what I had been unable to do for myself. I began reading his word, and it literally changed my whole life. I spent time with him in prayer and met regularly with my community group. God was very good to me in that time we were apart. He showed me how to live sober. Galatians 5:16-17 says, "So I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other, so you are not to do whatever you want." I discovered that I didn't need anyone's approval, because I was already made complete in Christ. Colossians 2:9-10 says, "For in him all the fullness of deity dwells in bodily form, and in him you have been made complete." He showed me what I wanted all along was a little bit more of him, and he was the means by which I could live free. 2 Peter 1:3-4 says, "His divine power has given us everything we need for a godly life through our knowledge of him who has called us by his own glory and goodness. Through these, he has given us his very great and precious promises, so that through them you may participate in the divine nature, having escaped the corruption in the world caused by evil desires." I never went back to using or drinking after that. As I read the word more, I was convicted about what a terrible husband I had become. I began to find greater satisfaction in my relationship with Jesus than I ever did in alcohol, drugs, or Cammie's approval. It freed me up to begin pursuing her again while we were separated. I came over regularly to take care of the yard, see if there was anything I could do to help her with the struggles of living alone with 3 children. We had family dinners almost every night at one point, and where I would share with her what God was teaching me. Even though I wasn't by any means free of my own struggles, God did allow me to begin to lead out spiritually. I sought forgiveness for the ways that I had hurt her, and I shared with her the peace that I was finding in surrendering to the Lord. I had some peace for the first time in my life, and I wasn't so consumed with making sure she knew how her issues had affected us. Instead, I tried to take responsibility for the part of the problem that was mine. I hoped that this would lead to Cammie responding in kind, but I wasn't sure that would actually happen. I was afraid that I could do everything right in my life and lay down my life for her the way that Ephesians 5 describes, and that she would remain unmoved. A wise mentor of mine hit me with some truth that changed my whole perspective during this time. He told me that, hey, if you lay down your life for somebody and they remain unmoved, you don't lose. It just makes you a little bit more like Christ. And so I quit trying to force a restored marriage, and I changed my focus to trying to become a little bit more like Christ.
So Griff was becoming the man that I always wanted. He was abiding with the Lord. He was serving, pursuing, and loving me. He was responsible and dependable, and it still didn't change things for me. My same struggles of control, disconnection, and self-protection were alive and well. And this was a breaking point for me, and it finally forced me to have to consider myself, because this is what I had been asking for a decade. I had the husband doing all the things I ever wanted, and I was still miserable. I was still unable to receive his love or to love him in return. Turns out that Griffin shaping up wasn't the solution to my problems. So I began spending time with the Lord and listening to the wise and godly counsel around me, and that helped me see how not dealing with the hurts from my past was keeping me stuck. I was holding Griffin hostage for all of my hurt and pain, even the parts that happened long before we ever met. I let the assault, the affair, all the bad choices I made, all the hurt that had been done to me define me and tell me my worth and value. So it's no surprise how worthless I was left feeling. I didn't know who God said I was, but was instead looking to others and how they treated me to tell me how worthy and valuable I was. It was only when I began to know and believe my identity in Christ that things changed for me. I was able to begin to sort through the pain of my past and the pain from my marriage through the lens of who God says I am. I began to understand that those experiences don't have the power to define me, because who Christ says I am is set in stone and cannot change, no matter what the circumstance or experience. 1 John 3:1 says, "See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are." I didn't have to self-protect anymore because not every situation was a threat to this false identity I had been clinging to. It freed me up to begin to love Griffin and to receive love from him in return. Not because he finally shaped up and did all the right things, but because I was finally becoming the woman that God made me to be. Galatians 5:1 says, "It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery."
So God has completely changed our marriage, but by no means are we immune to struggles. I'm still tempted to believe that anything besides God can really satisfy me. Cammie's still tempted to believe lies about her identity. And communicating about difficult things is still an area where we struggle to do well. We've tried doing it our own way, though. Try doing what seems right to us. And Proverbs 14:12 holds up, "Going your own way will lead to death." Our marriage was dead. Y'all, we really hated being around one another. And now, because of what God has done for us, we really, really love one another and celebrate the ways that we are so insanely different. God can do whatever he pleases, so if you're in a tough spot tonight, we are begging you to take the next obedient step and ask God to do for you what you haven't been able to do for yourself. Psalm 18:30 says, "As for God, his way is perfect. The Lord's word is flawless. He shields all those who take refuge in him." Our hope is that our story will challenge you to seek the Lord and let him show you that he is sufficient for whatever circumstances you find yourself in tonight. Thank you so much for letting us share what God has done for us.